This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Bigger Picture. In the fourth Health and Living webinar last week, we discussed the importance of vaccinations for children, especially during this pandemic. Here is an edited version of the webinar.
Hello and welcome. Thank you so much for joining us for BFM's Health and Living fourth webinar, part of the Health and Living webinar series, which is running from April right up till November. Thank you especially to our presenting sponsor, AIA Berhad, for making all of this possible. Today, we are going to be discussing vaccinations, of course. And I think that's kind of like a bee in everyone's bonnet right now, right? Vaccination, of course, as we deal with COVID. But COVID vaccines aren't the only ones that are important. Other immunizations are just as important for kids. But is the pandemic causing them to miss out on regular jabs? You know, what are these vaccinations? Why are some parents worried about vaccines being toxic? And something that I think a lot of us parents especially are contending with right now, should kids get the COVID-19 jab? So I think many of us also want to understand the implications of low vaccination rates, you know, and how we can increase vaccine-preventable diseases. And joining us to do that is Dr. Zulkifli Ismail, consultant pediatrician and chairman of Immunize for Life. So Dr. Zul, let's get straight to it. In Malaysia, all children get immunized for 13 childhood infections, right? Such as TB, measles, mumps, diphtheria, many more. Many of these diseases aren't even common anymore. You know, why do we still have to immunize our kids?
That's a good question, and I get it very often. I mean, the immunization program is actually a victim of its own success. It's been successful in eradicating the disease. So because of that, people have been hesitant. But I think it's a good idea now to actually remind ourselves of the diseases that we're actually preventing. If you look at these are the six diseases that we prevent with the vaccines that we give at the ages of 2, 3, and 5 months and then at 18 months. Now, diphtheria is a disease that causes that pseudomembrane in the back of the throat. And this will necessitate you doing a tracheostomy, which is making this incision in the neck here, to make sure that the child can breathe. And when you do that, you get all this muck coming out from the tracheostomy. Now, tetanus is another one where you get babies coming in with severe spasm and they are stiff like this. And when they are admitted, we used to see a lot of this in the 90s, early 90s, and we used to keep them in one corner of the ICU so that they don't get disturbed. Gosh. Any noise or any light will cause them to go into severe spasm. And pertussis or whooping cough is the other disease that causes severe bouts of coughing. This still occurs in this country. We still see it because the immunization is still low. And then polio, we all know about polio, which causes severe paralysis and deformity of the lower limbs because of the infection in nerves. HIP is Haemophilus influenzae type B. It causes an inflammation in the brain or meningitis and causes fever with headache, and then it can cause mental retardation and problems. Hepatitis B is something that infects the liver, and if you have it, your chances of getting cancer of the liver is very high when you become adults. So these are the diseases that we are preventing, and this is why we actually have to continue with vaccination rather than not give it to our children.
I mean, experts have said that the majority of people do trust vaccinations, right? And that true anti-vaxxers are actually in the minority, albeit a very loud minority. But do you think this pandemic has created even more anti-vaxxers? And are you seeing more parents refusing vaccinations now?
No, actually, we're not seeing more parents refusing vaccination. But we are seeing parents who are more aware of vaccines, and they ask me about COVID vaccines because the patients who come to see me are a select few. They are people who already accept vaccines. If you want to actually look at what the MCO or the pandemic has done, the uptake of the vaccine, the DTP, HIP, polio and hepatitis B, which is a 6-in-1 vaccine, in 2019, you have a very pretty high peak. And then there's a drop in the month of March of 2020, and then a pickup again, April, May, June, July. And then when you see in 2021, there's a drop in April, May and June. Now, this coincided with the MCOs. Remember, the first MCO occurred in 2020 in March. So that caused a drop. And then now we are in MCO now, which is in the month of May, June. And so May, June, you can see May, April, May, June, it's all dropped. For MMR, mumps, measles and rubella, you still see the same thing. You see a drop in the month of March in 2020. And then in 2021, you see April, May and June again a drop. But you see high peaks in January of both years. All right. And pneumococcal vaccine, same thing. All right. So there are reasons why the parents don't bring the kids over during the MCO period. So there was this fear that during the MCO, but it's not because parents are afraid of giving the vaccine. It's because they were afraid to get out of the house and they're afraid that they will get COVID in the hospital or in the clinic, or they get COVID because of some other reasons within, because a lot of parents are staying at home. So we can understand that. And so if you look at why parents have these are reasons that we've got from our patients, because a lot of them actually fear COVID in the hospital or in the clinics. And then there's crowding in these small areas. Then, of course, MCO enforcement, the police will stop you and then ask you where you're going. Then people don't want to have the hassle of explaining. A lot of them were not aware that our clinics and immunizations were still going on during that time. Some took the advantage to go back home, then got stuck at home and couldn't bring the child or the immunization book to us. And then, of course, work from home. So other priorities that take up. So immunization was at the back of their mind. We actually tell parents that, we're still here. We still give the vaccine. We still screen everybody who comes to the hospital. And so far, we haven't got anybody who's in the hospital got infected from somewhere within the hospitals.
But is it dangerous to skip or miss those doses? I mean, kids are mostly staying at home as well, right? There's less exposure to infections. They're not going to school. What are your thoughts?
Right now, they're not going to school, so their risk of exposure is lower. But you still have to protect them because you still need that antibody in their levels to be at a certain level. So you need to keep boosting it so that the children will be protected, so that when we open up, then instead of being exposed to just COVID, it'll probably be exposed to other diseases as well. And that's what we're afraid of.
Another thing that parents have been choosing to do is they prefer to postpone some immunizations so that they're not so close together, or that kids get them when they're older. Is that something that's recommended?
No, I think the ones that we give, the ones that we are supposed to give at the specified ages, they should be given at the specified ages, because we want to prevent them getting the infection at those ages when they are very vulnerable. So please don't defer your vaccinations.
Okay. All right. And I would like to talk about some of those concerns that our parents have, right? Maybe you can help clear it up for all of us. I think one of the most famous ones, of course, is the MMR causes autism. How would you like to debunk that?
That was actually started by a paper that was published in The Lancet in 1979. This was by Dr. Andrew Wakefield with that association. But that paper was subsequently withdrawn, and most of the authors actually withdrew their name from the paper. And there's a bit of fraud that was attached to it, and it was withdrawn in 2002. So there was this period of about maybe 6 years when they capitalized on it, and that has gone on and on and on. So there is no association between MMR vaccine and autism at all. Most of the ones that got autism actually had symptoms of it before the vaccine was given. So some of the other things that you may have heard of is harmful ingredients in the vaccine. Mm. If there were harmful ingredients in the vaccine, I will be the first one not to give it to the children. And I won't even give it to my children or my grandchildren. So, if we give it to our children, our grandchildren, and even ourselves, because I get influenza vaccine every year. So, people don't have to worry about it. The other thing is probably whether these vaccines are halal or not, which is an issue in some communities. But the vaccines that are given in by our Ministry of Health have all gone through the proper process of evaluation. And if it is not halal, it will either be stated so or it will not be given, at least by the Ministry of Health. And I explain to my patients if some of the ingredients are not halal.
Some parents are worried about the adverse side effects caused by the vaccines, right? And to them, these stories, you know, I heard it from my friend's aunt and uncle, and they seem far more convincing than any scientific studies, right? Because it happened to somebody I know who I know who I know. What's really true?
There will be adverse events, as we call it, right, following immunization. But those are so, so very rare with the vaccines that we have used now. We've used millions and billions of doses all over the world, and we've had no problems with it. But there are still some parents who say that they would prefer to have natural immunity. You know, if you breastfeed the child, he should be protected. Yeah, we promote breastfeeding. But then the protection, if you get infected, would you be willing to risk getting the infection and uncontrolled, and you can end up with a child who's retarded or a child who's, you know, who may succumb to the disease, like if you get diphtheria? I'm telling you this because your child can end up with this if you don't give the vaccine.
We'll go for a quick break now. This is an edited version of the fourth Health and Living webinar on why vaccination matters for your child. Stay tuned to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Bigger Picture. You're listening to an edited version of the fourth Health and Living webinar where we spoke to consultant pediatrician Dato Dr. Zulkifli Ismail on why vaccinations continue to be important for children and what are the latest updates on COVID-19 jabs for children.
We have another question here from Janice Wong. She's asking, is it safe to bring an immunocompromised child to the hospital for jabs now?
It's quite safe to bring the child, the immunocompromised child. You have to be careful, though, that you actually, if the child is more than 2 years old, then she'd have to wear the mask and all that. But otherwise, if she's with you all the time and you stay your distance of 2 meters away from the next nearest person, you get screened as on admission, you stay away from the rest of the crowd, you're in the clinic and all that. And if you're aware, just be aware of your environment, including the things that you touch and the people who come near you. So the places where you will get crowds will be inside lifts, inside the clinic proper, and then when you are indoors.
Okay. One more question. How about vaccines for children who have been diagnosed with congenital heart defects? Is it safe?
Yes. Okay. Children with congenital heart defects need to have the vaccine. They need to have all the vaccines that we are giving. They need to have the pneumococcal conjugate vaccine as well. And they can be given the COVID vaccine. And right now, if you are 12 to 17 years old, if you have congenital heart disease, if you have thalassemia, if you have hemophilia, if you have diabetes, kidney disease like nephrotic syndrome or severe chronic asthma, you can be given the COVID vaccine because these are the high-risk patients who actually need the vaccines for now.
All right. I just want to ask you also about, you know, those additional immunizations, you know, which are not actually covered in the national immunization program. So influenza, chickenpox, rotavirus. How important are these additional immunizations?
All right. The additional immunizations, the additional vaccines, these are important in that you still need to give them. Now, the only reason it's not in the immunization program, national immunization program, is because adding these onto the program, number one, will have additional cost, right? Number two, the national program is for the whole country. So some people may find that it's too much to come to the clinic every time to get vaccinated. So because of that, we have to cap it at some level. But I'm sure that the ministry will be putting in more vaccines, antigens, because there will be a need for it, especially like chickenpox and influenza. But then we have to remember also that vaccination is a life costing. It's not just for children, yeah? Adults also need to be vaccinated.
Okay. There's just one question here from Sally Locke, who says, my baby is very scared of strangers because we've been in lockdown for so long and starts crying and won't let anyone else come near her. It's been so difficult bringing her for jabs. What do I do?
Yes, that's nothing new. That's been a lot of my patients actually do that. I mean, some of the patients I'd seen earlier, but when they come after the lockdown, they actually fear me, and they also fear being in the hospital because they've never been out of the house, and I can understand that, and that's something that we have to deal with. We have to actually deal with children who now have been not exposed to strangers so much, and we're actually worried about the effects on the psychological background to these kids in the future. So if you can keep talking to children and then take them outside once in a while to show them that there are cars moving outside, that will help a bit. Now, how do you bring them for jabs? Well, there's nothing much you can do about it. You can just tell them that we're going to see the doctor today, and then we're going to get a little injection, and then, you know, you can rehearse it at home before she comes, you know, have a toy stethoscope or something, and then this is what the doctor is going to do, and then this is the injection and all that. You play act this at home. But you have to remember, yeah, if children are so scared of going out of the house now, if they come to the hospital and their first experience is to get an injection, that's going to be pretty traumatic for the child.
Yeah.
So it's a good idea to maybe take them out for a while, take them out for some other drives once in a while. Then you take them to the hospital. Then it's not an unpleasant experience to get out of the house.
So now let's move our focus onto COVID-19 vaccinations. So we know that in Malaysia, COVID-19 vaccinations have been approved for children above 12 years old, but we're prioritising exam year students who will turn 18 this year. The MOH is also studying giving jabs to teenagers with chronic conditions who are at higher risk for COVID. So for context, right, how widespread is COVID-19 among children and how dangerous is it for them?
Roughly, in this country, this is after talking to my friends in Sungai Buloh Hospital who look after the children with COVID patients, about 10 to 12% of the total number of adult patients would be children. That would be now more than about 100,000 of them. Now, you have to understand this. Yeah? In children, number one, children don't get infected as easily as adults. Number two, when they get infected, they are either asymptomatic or they're running around. They're not that severely affected. That means they are either category 1 or category 2 and they don't require oxygen. So the only thing that we have a worry about is something that's called the multi-system inflammatory syndrome in childhood, which is similar to what we call Kawasaki disease, which can sometimes hurt the heart and cause other problems. But so far in this country, it's not as common as what we thought it would be. But although there have been reports, and I think the people in the infectious disease people from here will be reporting it soon.
And I think the question that a lot of people are asking is also, how effective are the vaccines in preventing COVID among children?
Now, that's a tough question to answer. Right now, the data from the US and the Pfizer data shows that it is protective for children aged 12 to 17 years old. And as you have mentioned, we are a bit more cautious in giving it to those 12 to 17 who are normal, because now we are giving it to children who have got problems, what we call comorbidities in children. So we give it to these children, but we can give it to normal children. They may sail through without getting any problems. But there are some issues that we are concerned about, that we have actually, the government has actually decided to err on the side of caution so that we do not overexpose to these children. Now, you have to remember, like I said, children, number one, do not get it as frequently as adults. Number two, when they get it, they don't get a severe disease. That means not many of them will actually require the ventilator. And number three is the transmission between child to adult and child to child is actually lower than from adult to child. So the transmission is mainly from adult to children.
We just have one question here from Yuan Quinn, who's asking, could a child below the age of 12 get the COVID-19 vaccine?
For the time being, no. For the time being, the vaccine is not recommended or not given to children less than 12. So, no, unless the government says that one of the other vaccines, probably Sinovac, later when the data comes in. But right now, there's no data, so no, they're not.
Okay. We're also studying the risk of myocarditis, am I right? What kind of side effects have been reported?
Myocarditis is actually an inflammation of the muscle of the heart. You're right, that is one of the side effects. And as I mentioned earlier, this is something that we were concerned with the COVID vaccine, the Pfizer COVID vaccine, because the incidence of myocarditis was higher in the younger age group. That means 12 to 17 is higher than 18 to 29 and then higher than in adults. So that was a cause of concern. And that was the reason, I think, that the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Education withheld giving it to normal children for the time being until we have more data. So if you look at the incidence of myocarditis and pericarditis among children aged 12 to 17 after giving the vaccine, the number is about 67 per million doses. That's still small, right? 67 out of a million doses. But the trouble is that 67 is slightly higher or is higher than the baseline children with myocarditis. That means normal children who not get vaccinated, who got myocarditis, this is higher than that. That's the reason why there's a bit of caution. And I said earlier, we err on the side of caution.
Dr. Zhu, would you have any final message that you'd like to leave us with?
I just want to tell parents that, number one, they shouldn't be afraid of the vaccines that their children are getting because these are all proven. Number two, please keep to the schedule because then it will protect the children when we start opening up and they go back to school. Because we're not giving children the COVID vaccine. We're giving adults who surround the children. That means the teachers, the bus drivers, the canteen operators and so on. But we need them to be protected from the other diseases so that they don't get the other diseases.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Zulkifli Ismail, consultant pediatrician and chairman of Immunize for Life, for speaking with us today.
That was an edited version of the 4th Health and Living webinar. To watch the full webinar, go to facebook.com/BFM Radio. Download the limited edition vaccine activity booklet from the link and you'll join the lucky draw. This webinar series is brought to you by AIA, enabling healthier, longer, better lives. This has been The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.